I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching a game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
We are here to provide the shoulder that some of you want to maybe cry on after the Montreal Impact fail to... In their quest to get their hands on that CONCACAF Champions League trophy, they lose 4-2 to Club America in the Champions League final second leg. They finish runners-up in this competition. I'm joined by David Goss. I'm Simon Borg. We will be joined later in the show by Kai Kamara of Columbus Crew SC. We'll get into the MLS weekend in the second segment, but we've got to start with the Montreal Impact. Andrew Wiebe, the host of the show, was up there. We'll get him on in a little bit as well. David, I think we got to thank the Montreal Impact. Thank them for not only a great run, but to me, thank them for showing us in this edition of the Champions League, you know, with all the debate that happens around the Champions League, why can't Major League Soccer win it? Is it the fact that MLS is in preseason? Is it the fact that going to Mexico? Is it the schedule, the MLS schedule and juggling the two? Is it all the travel? No, it's now evident, based on what Montreal has gone through, that the only difference is the number of DPs on the field. MLS teams have a maximum of 3. And in my opinion, you look at that Club America side, they had 6 or 7. That's what it comes down to.
I mean, Club America is a great team as well. Club America.
But that's why they're a great team.
Yeah. Also, I don't think that that's true, because I think Montreal did show us that if you put in the time of the preparation, it wasn't that travel's irrelevant. It's not that you can fly into Pachuca and get a win. They went down. They put in the time. They moved their league games. They put in the time and money, we saw, to be down in Mexico, to get experience, to acclimate, to really get comfortable.
But
so I
when
disagree
it comes down
with
to
you
it,
on
David,
that.
The crux of the issue is that the Montreal Impact had Ignacio Piatti as their only real, I would say, difference maker in the attack. Dominic Oduro has speed, and that speed can cause problems. But there's a difference between a player that causes problems than a difference maker who can define the game. And Club America has about 5 of them in the attack.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there.
Peralta, Dario Benedetto, Ruben Sambuesa.
Darwin Quintero.
I mean, there are 4 or 5 DPs. And
I like that you can count, too. That was a big moment there. I can't disagree with you. I think you're selling a few guys short, but yeah. I mean, Justin Mapp is a difference maker. He wasn't there. He was hurt. If when Oribe Peralta was hurt, they didn't score a goal without him on the field. So there are important guys.
Yeah, but Dario Benedetto, you're talking about the first leg. He had a bunch of chances.
Yeah, he didn't score them.
It was an off night for him.
I disagree. I think he struggled with the lone pressure of the defense when Peralta wasn't there for Simon and Samari to focus on. But
they did look like a handful together.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the run of goals in a row, and now we can get into the game as well. But Simon and Samari, neither of them are near Peralta. They're just a step late, and they get split by the two forwards, and they don't know which one to follow, that was rough.
Let's get into it. So Montreal, they take an early lead, 8th minute.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
So
they're up 2-1 on aggregate.
And then the crowd's going, and everything went perfect.
And they're buzzing. The players are spirited, you can tell. But in the back of your mind, you know, America's still in it. They're just a goal.
Yeah.
They're still a goal away. That didn't really change much for America. America had to go there and score a goal. That didn't change with Piatti scoring. But then in what, the 26th
Piatti didn't score,
minute?
Romero scored,
sorry.
Because Piatti.
I apologize. Yeah, Piatti started the play. Romero scored, Andres Romero. Then Piatti had the big chance, 24th, 26th minute, to make it 2-0. Why is he not shooting there?
And
why is he not shooting?
It's something that we've seen with him and with Romero.
They're
on
dribblers.
Their opportunities.
They want to dribble everyone.
And they want to hold on to the ball. And there are a few times it's felt like in this run where they've lost their opportunity and it's come back and they've still scored. You know, there's been a few. I mean, Romero, the goal against Alajuelense, you thought he dribbled himself out of the play and then he's still able to finish. Similar to this one, I thought as well. That's the type of players they are. And the first touch, off his first touch, he can just place it into that right post.
That's it.
And it's 2-0. And then I really think the game's not over. But
okay, but this goes to my point. The team was lacking a finisher. And I understand that Cameron Porter was out injured. Yeah. But they didn't have a finisher who would do what Marco Di Vaio would do in that case, which is the ball comes to his foot. It's in the back of the net.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, they could have used Di Vaio in this game. And yes, that's your point that there aren't as many attacking players. Yeah, I guess so. I think they still could have won this game. They still set themselves up to play well. Something happened when they came out of halftime. I understand the gap.
At the half, they were up 1-0. So they come out of halftime. And
Di Benedetto missed the sitter he put off the crossbar, which is like, at that point, you're like, oh, okay. Like, this things are going well for them. There's something going on here.
This was in the first half.
The soccer gods
are spinning. The crossbar was in the first half. So the second half starts, and again, you figure you might see – America didn't have that many chances. They had the one crossbar opportunity. Then you get into the second half, and, you know, when America get their equalizer, what strikes you immediately is the fact that they're targeting the right side. Beautiful goal by Dario Benedetto.
An assist from
– who was it?
Martinez?
Who is Osvaldo Martinez?
He's given the red card for the dog so in the first game, isn't on the field.
Isn't on the field.
That's the opening goal. It's a great chip from the top of the box, a little bit of space, but that stuck out to me.
But so I wonder, the team wasn't as compact. You are 45 minutes away from winning the title.
Yeah.
And you'd imagine that they would be a little more defensive, more numbers behind the ball.
I was talking to Andrew about the game yesterday and today, and he was
You have conversations with him when I'm not around?
At times we pretend to. Yeah, we just do bird signals and smoke. he said that they were all surprised that they didn't bunker, that they didn't just go 11 behind the ball. But in my opinion, Club America was not going to be held scoreless in this game. If you wanted to win it in regulation, Montreal was going to have to score at least two goals. They weren't going to – even if they bunkered – and played well, they were going to give up a goal because America has that quality and they were going to have the pressure and the possession and they were going to have those opportunities. So I understand the idea of bunkering and maybe trying to get yourself to PKs, but Montreal did need to score another goal. And I think it's not the issue that they didn't bunker. They were just a step slow. They were just so inefficient in their movement.
They had fewer numbers. It's what helped them in the first leg in Mexico City is they had numbers behind the ball. It was hard for America to find
spaces. But America had 28 shots there. America had the opportunities. Di Benedetto, that's an unbelievable take on that goal.
So the goal came in the 50th minute.
Yeah.
Should Christian Nicht, the stand-in goalkeeper who they acquired just 2 days ago, the beginning of the week, should he have done better there?
What I'm going to say is a soccer cliche is he could have done better, but it's a great goal. It was a great shot. And it comes so quickly. If Evan Bush is there, I don't know if he does better because it's such a great opportunity. He gets a touch to it. When a goalie touches the ball, you always want to say then they could have done better. I don't blame him, but yes, he could have done better.
So Montreal at that point, 50th minute, the equalizer goes in, and I feel they suffered a psychological blow. They did, because I think they said, okay, I think their best chance to win this, we talked about it last week, was earlier in the week, was keeping a zero on the board. They didn't. Now their fortress now has been penetrated and more is coming. And you saw them, there was just something in the air where they were now down.
See, what's odd to me is I saw that right out of halftime. That the movement from the impact was slow, as if there was altitude and their legs were heavy. And it was so odd to me because my only fear mentality-wise was that they would be overexcited at the start of the game because of the crowd, because of the moment. And they handled that well, and yet they came out of the locker room flat with a 1-0 lead. I thought it was before the goal, and I think it's a big reason for the goal is no one steps up to pressure Martinez when he's on the ball. And then after that, you're right, there was movement. Every single 1-2 between America left a Montreal player dead, and they were able to move off the ball and get space. And I thought Duca looked tired. I thought Rio Coker looked a little uncomfortable in his positioning.
Right back. So then you had the second goal. This is where the game was lost. In a three-minute span, 64th minute to 66, Peralta scores a goal. That again, you wonder if Nicht could have done better, the goalkeeper, to actually make a dive on, perhaps.
But maybe. My first reaction is, where is Simon?
That's the other.
Why is Simon not goal side of Uribe Peralta at that moment?
And, you know, I think Baki Sumari maybe misread that, the header there. And then 2 minutes later, Dario Benedetto pokes in a goal, and that was it.
Yeah.
At that point, then Montreal needed to score three goals in order to advance, and you knew it was over.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you know, they finished 4-2, but at that point, the other goals were just formality. We can go and start trying to blame.
Yeah.
You can start saying it's the lineup. It's the injuries. It's the goalkeeper. It's maybe Rio Coco at right back. You can go. They wouldn't bunker enough. But I think we just need to say thank you to the Impact for giving us a great run.
Yeah.
I think it's going to do well for them as a club in terms of profile among North American fans. And even worldwide to some extent, even though they didn't win it. I feel we saw another side of Montreal. A lot of people don't remember 2009. Do you?
I do, yeah.
But 2009 against Santos Laguna. That was a quarterfinal.
Crowd. Yeah.
But that was a quarterfinal. This was a final.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to change. I think people still have the last place finish from last year.
Yeah.
And that they're one of the poor teams in MLS. And they're not.
I saw people.
They played really well.
Yeah. And I saw people on Twitter, like, the moment it ended, all of a sudden, we're like, well, did you expect Montreal to win? And I know you guys talked about it on the show. You guys did not pick them. But to say that it's ridiculous, they're leading 1-0 at halftime. They went down to America and led for 89 minutes. They got the result at Pachuca. So, like, to then immediately try and switch, like, throw that switch and say, well, I knew this was going to happen, and obviously this is going to happen, I think is a little bit ridiculous. And I know a lot of people are talking about the point of the depth and the quality. And that's what you're saying with the DPs in a different way. But
And that's why I thank him. I thank him as well because I think we can put this to bed now. We know what it takes. And everyone was outraged when there was talk of Sean Johnson possibly being loaned to the Montreal Impact. I mean, Mexican clubs did it for Copa.
Did you actually confirm? Yeah. Have you confirmed that in your time off since the last show? Because you said it very unsure on the last show. And I was sitting on the plane and I was like, he's a liar.
No, I did not have time to confirm it, but I'm pretty damn sure it happened.
Okay.
So everyone's scandalized by it, but I think it will take MLS clubs basically joining forces and say, you know what? We're going to give you one of our DPs.
No.
We're going to give you. Until the DP.
How can you say that, though, when they were 45 minutes away and they have one DP? You said they didn't have enough DPs. There are MLS teams with three DPs. Mm-hmm. So if an MLS team with three DPs is in that moment and they're 45 minutes away, how can you say that they need someone to loan them Bradley Wright Phillips for the game?
They were a few DPs short. They were just a few DPs
short. But they have the roster ability to add those players.
More DPs, you cannot. Do I have to go through the roster with you, the roster rules? No, you need – otherwise, you give Champions League teams the chance to sign players. But who's going to sign for a three-month period as a DP just to play Champions League in the spring?
You could give an additional one to Champions League teams for the season. You know, you give teams monetary awards.
What, do you give them
qualifying.
Another DP?
I don't know if that's what you're suggesting.
That's not going to fly. Let's talk to Andrew Wiebe, the host of Extra Time Radio, who was at the game. And Andrew, we tried calling you a few times here. You did not pick up. What's going on? What's
you know, that happens, guys. I'm eating lunch. I'm just, you know, I'm on the road. We just went to the Adirondack. I have priorities here. Number one is to fill my belly.
Whoa, and taking in the scenery as well, huh?
It is beautiful. It is beautiful. I'm planning a trip. Just like I said, I would move to Mexico City. I may leave you guys for the Adirondack. I have a lot of options on the table.
Well, you should stay there and just do some real estate shopping while you're there. Just move this along.
Let's move this process along. Might have to do that.
So, Andrew, you're sounding real cheery, more so than many MLS fans, I think, on Thursday, the day after Montreal Impact lose at home 4-2, a result I think few expected. Tell me, what's the gist you got from that Montreal locker room after the game?
Well, first, I'm not sure what the few expected side is. I picked Club America to win this thing. I think that most people, most reasonable people, figured that America, their quality would show. You know, they outshot the Impact 28-4 in the first leg. They just didn't finish their chances. Once they got the momentum in the second half, that all changed. And of course, the Impact were disappointed. But I didn't feel that, there wasn't despair, let's say. It wasn't that this was something that that was going to affect them perhaps for a long time. Sure, it'll stick in their memories, but I think they all, for the most part, acknowledge that Club America were simply the better team on the day. It's a team that Frank Popas mentioned, kind of the salary gap. He mentioned Patrice Bernier mentioned the experience factor, the technical gap between the two teams. I think you saw that in the second half. The big disappointment for Montreal has to be the way they came out of the locker room. Popas said he was surprised a little bit by how flat they were. You could immediately see it in the stadium in the first half. They're fighting for every ball. They're around it. They're not letting America get space, although they did luck out when Benedetto hit that crossbar. That was one of the most amazing misses of all time. But to come out so... the only word I have for it is flat in the second half. That's what really, really ate at them. And I think that's the difference between having a chance to win this thing late on and you know, Club America just seeing the game out.
And Andrew, that struck me, you know, in the post-game press conference. I was watching on Univision Deportes. Frank Lopez, you know, comes in. He's standing with his crew of coaches, the rest of the coaches, and he's celebrating the fact that one of the members of the training staff had a baby that same day. And there was almost – there was no anger in their face. It was more, we knew maybe we didn't, you know, we weren't going to win this. We knew the better team was them all along, and it just happened. So we carry on with life.
Yeah, I don't think resigned is the right word, because they certainly weren't resigned to losing this series and losing their opportunity to go to the Club World Cup. But I think that they knew, and everyone else knew, that they were huge underdogs here, that this was going to be a Lake Placid story, shall we say, if they got this done. It didn't happen for them, but that didn't mean they weren't proud of the effort. That doesn't mean that people in MLS, Montreal Impact fans, even impartial observers can't walk away from that saying, boy, I would be proud of what they got done there. In the end, you know, they had some fortunate breaks as they went through the knockout stage. Remember, they just won one game. It's not as though that they pushed through this thing and dominated. They got through by the seat of their pants, and they got to the final stage, and they had a chance. If Piatti finishes that opportunity in the first half, maybe it's a different story. He didn't, and America's quality shone through. You know, I think it just didn't happen for them. They didn't have the depth. I think they could deal with that. They didn't seem like they were going to go home and cry about it. Let's just say that.
They came out of the locker room, you said, in the second half a little bit flat. But take us into the start of the game. The atmosphere in the building, we've heard about the crowd for weeks now or a few weeks now building up. Where the energy level, you've been to World Cups, you've been to MLS Cup Finals. Where does it maybe compare?
David and his event experience. He wants to know the event experience.
It looked amazing on TV in the Miami airport.
Yeah, it was as amazing as it looked in that Miami airport. I walked out with all the guys afterwards. You know, we had a huge crew up there to cover. And I was kind of racking my brain for, you know, games in the last 4 or 5 years that I've been to that have been at that level. Let me tell you right now, they put the Club America fans to shame. I think part of that is that it's a domed stadium, and the numbers weren't drastically different probably. It was probably around the same size crowd, but the Big O just holds that noise in, and they could really, the fans there could really feel the opportunity, the occasion at hand. I saw so much Impact here. We rode the train to the stadium, full of Impact fans as well. It echoed, and it really got in your brain. And I could see how at the beginning that could throw America off just a little bit, because I can't imagine they expected it to be quite that good. Matosas said afterwards, "Wow, this is as good as Azteca," and for him to say that, that was pretty incredible to me.
But in another interview, Andrew, he said, we felt like we were at home with the America support that was there. I mean, when they scored, you could hear the America supporters.
No.
Yes.
That, to me, you could hear them. There was a big group of them, probably about 1,500. But to me, that's him pandering to the support. It did not feel like they were at Azteca. There was no indication of that. Props to the America fans. There were a good number of them that came down, but to say that it equates to that, I can't imagine that. That's not the stadium I said it.
Andrew, before we let you go, give me a good road trip story. You drove up there, you're driving back. What's give me something that happened? Come on, something crazy, a joke in the car, or maybe someone.
Here's the joke for you. We went and got cocktails at a place right next to our Airbnb in Montreal called Big in Japan. Every night before we went to bed, it was two doors down. We said before the CCL final, boy, this is fitting. We're going to hit Big in Japan for the third night if the Impact can book their spot in Japan. of course, it didn't happen. We had a lot of plans. We were gonna go a little bit wild. I think once we got our work done, had it gone the Montreal Impact way, it didn't. Ended up nothing doing for us. Montreal, a beautiful city, though. That's my that's my third destination I'll threaten to move to leave you guys.
I hope the food you're eating is better than that story.
I just don't have the stories to live up to you. You have a different idea of like, what we do on the road. It's not this wild and crazy life.
It's okay, Andrew.
I'm not David Goss.
I thought it was a good story. Simon wanted, I think, a little bit more of you maybe, I don't know, jumping off the top of a building and skydiving into the stadium.
Material.
Yeah, exactly.
He wants the headline material.
He's all clickbait.
All right, Andrew. Yep. We will expect you here at the Extra Time Radio Helm next week.
Done, guys. I'll see you then.
Thanks, Andrew. So Wiebe, he did some work while he was in Montreal. He has a piece up on MLSsoccer.com trying to go into how does MLS change the tide? How does MLS finally win this thing, the CCL? And it was interesting to hear some of the takes from the Montreal camp, beginning with Frank Klopas, who picked an interesting bit to highlight here. He says, put some real bonuses in there so the guys take it really seriously and focus on it. If they do, I think you'll see MLS teams every year being in the position that we were.
Now, is that the players, the guys, or the teams, the guys?
Whatever. The players, the teams.
Well, no, it's different saying that the players need the bonuses to play hard enough, or the teams need to understand that they should focus there. Like, for example, Montreal focused on CCL. The New York Red Bulls focused on MLS last year.
Right, but you're saying what? Give them bonuses from the group stage?
I'm asking.
No way.
No, I'm asking which Klopas is talking about there.
As in what group stage or knockout stage?
No, team or players when he's talking about the bonuses.
What does it matter?
Well, one is the
team bonus will be shared among the players.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're having this conversation. This is not where I thought you'd slip up, David.
Okay.
But anyway, that to me is an interesting one because I don't know that I would go the bonus route.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like the one thing that's standing out. I think you also misunderstood my point before, but it's fine.
It's something that it'd be interesting to see if it was in place, to see if it really would get a difference in approach and in performance. The one, Patrice Bernier, I think indirectly he's agreeing with me on this when he says, in MLS, we play a little bit like the English, athletic, physical soccer. The teams in CCL, he says, have a lot of technical qualities, even the smaller teams in Central America. We need to be adept, technically good with the ball, can't make mistakes. Technically, they are spot on, and that makes the difference in terms of execution.
And also,
to me, that's quality of player.
I think that's quality of player, but it's also style of player, and I think you see it because a lot of times MLS South American DPs, especially, for example, Piatti, do well in CCL against an opponent like this because they fit into that style. Rather than bringing a David Beckham over who doesn't play that style. You understand what I mean?
Boy, you're going to go Piatti there? The guy who dribbles and coughs it up?
But at the same time, constantly
can't hold the ball?
Constantly
can't
draws
possession?
Constantly draws fouls, created every single goal they scored throughout this competition to get to the final, I think. And at times...
But didn't do it consistently enough.
Maybe, but you said he's the only one. So
yeah, that's true.
Maybe that's why.
You have
why.
To have him on the field. Interested to see what you, the listeners, have to say about this. What's the one thing? If you could change one thing ahead of the next edition, what do you think it should be? Let us know at Extra Time Radio on Twitter. extratime@mlssoccer.com is the email. And we'll be back after the break. We're going to be speaking to Kai Kamara. We'll ask him about this as well. You're listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM Channel 94 and mlssoccer.com.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
This is Ollie Curtis, the sporting director for the New York Red Bulls, and I'm on Extra Time Radio.
AMX. Hello, Fanato.
Back on Extra Time Radio.
Came in a little early there, Simon.
Simon Borg, David Goss.
You didn't want a little bit more of the booty dancing music?
David called that one of his favorite songs of all time.
Come on.
Congratulations. I think that might be the influence that you had being in Miami. You said you were in Miami Airport or something?
Yeah, no, I was transferring through. I went to Panama City Panama, the country, over the weekend for a short trip to visit a friend who lives down there. This song has been my favorite for a little bit, for much longer than
that.
Did
you get to dance it there?
Did I get to dance to this song? No, I didn't hear this song when I was there. They do listen to a lot of reggaeton and reggae.
I think a lot of countries have moved on from danza
kuduro. I think so, too.
So you missed most of the Montreal match because you were traveling back.
Yeah, so I watched the first half in the airport, and I actually made the last call running into the plane right at halftime.
So you thought when you landed you were going to see Montreal champions.
I didn't assume, but I was very, very hopeful in my whole head. I planned out the show on my phone as if they had won, which I probably should have done a backup as well in the 2.5 hours in the air. And right as we came down, my phone was on, and so I got service right as we were landing.
Wait a minute. You're one of those guys?
Yeah, I don't put on airplane mode.
You are one of those guys?
I mean, I'll put on airplane mode to save the battery, but yeah, I'm one of those guys.
I mean, I am one of those guys that will get in a fist fight with one of you guys.
Fist to cuffs.
Yeah, fist fight. No, I will on the plane.
Then that would be you and me.
Like, what? Don't you know that there could be interference on the plane?
Don't you know that there's no way that if it was true that it hasn't already happened, that a plane can't operate with a cell phone on? Because let's be totally honest, in the society we live in, every cell phone is left on.
Do you not realize
it's an advanced piece of technology
that we have scientists in our audience who will now write to you and tell you you are putting lives at risk?
If they do that, I would definitely stop. And I was always against it, and just recently I started to change my ways.
Breaking the law.
Yeah.
Okay. It's because it's against FAA regulations. They tell you to turn it off.
Yes, they do.
David Goss breaking the law. Let's help him not break the law anymore. Looking ahead to this weekend, I'm glad you made it safe because you get to see a full weekend of MLS games, 9 matches. And since you love telling us must wins, last week the must win was Orlando-Toronto, and Toronto did win.
Yeah.
So they satisfied their must
win. Which means they don't have one this week. They need a tie. They have a must tie, but not a must win.
What is the must win, the team in the must win position of the weekend? 9 games you have to choose from.
Looking at the schedule, I don't love
Philly. Is Philly in that spot? They play Saturday, 4 Eastern. MLS Live, TSN4.
I may actually have already been moving on from Philly here and saying that I just don't really think they can. I think must win is RSL.
Yes.
I think they can't not win.
They're Friday night, 10 Eastern on UDN, part of the UDN doubleheader on
Friday.
But
when I look at this weekend, I see two teams that have the huge potential of a big win, and it's Columbus and Chicago. Two teams that I think.
No. To play the game is must win. Which team is back to the wall?
So then I guess it's RSL. It's RSL's in a must-win situation.
At home against San Jose Earthquakes, 10 Eastern Friday. I believe New York City FC, they're the last game of the entire slate this weekend. Sunday, May 3rd, 7 Eastern at Yankee Stadium hosting Seattle Sounders. Now, I know New York City FC have a ton of injuries.
Yeah.
But if they lose at home again,
I can't. The reason I don't say it's a must-win and I'm playing the game wrong is I don't see the way that they do.
You say they can't win.
Yeah.
They can't win their must win.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the reality of the situation with them is until Lampard's here, I don't know how much of a threat they are. And I think it's just a matter of managing the minutes and managing their points so they're in a situation where they get him and they get Villa back, hopefully, around a similar time healthy, and then they move forward.
So New York City FC, they're an Eastern Conference team playing a Western Conference team playing Seattle. That's Fox Sports 1 and TSN 1 and Fox Deportes. That's Sunday, May 3rd, 7 Eastern. The game before that, Chicago, another Eastern team. They play on ESPN 2 and ESPN Deportes. They travel to Sporting
Kansas
City.
And I think that's a huge chance for them. They've won 3 straight games, all at home, all against, I'd say, lower opposition or
We're
red card
they
Toronto.
Being who? Chicago. Thank you.
And I think this is an opportunity to go on the road at KC and really prove that they deserve to be in that
so big games for Chicago and New York City FC in the East. And I think this is going to be a weekend very much in the Eastern Conference what we're going to be focused on, because the Saturday slate starts with 3 Eastern Conference matches head to head. We mentioned Philly Toronto 4 Eastern, DC Columbus at 7 Eastern. We'll get into that now with Kai Kamara coming up. And then there's New York Red Bulls. They're the only team left undefeated. They go to New England, arguably the team that played the better game of any MLS team.
Also knocked them out of the MLS playoffs last year.
Now, we should say that New York Red Bulls did play a game in midweek.
Yeah.
Nobody watched it because everyone was focused on the Champions League game.
Yeah.
And it finished 1-1. So they maintained their undefeated streak. Colorado went up in that one, by the way. So the Red Bulls now 7 undefeated.
Yeah.
They're not happy with the way they played that one.
I don't think they're happy with the way they played the last two. I think they kind of limped over the line and got a tie against LA as well, both at home. They're undefeated, but I don't think that shows the message that they've picked up all the points that they should have. And I think that's what they see, and that's not wrong. They go away to a New England team that's playing really well.
Toughest test? Is this tougher than LA at home?
Yes.
To go to New England?
Yes,
to
absolutely.
Face the New England side?
With the way LA was set up when they came and the way LA is playing, this is a New England team that scores goals right now and a New York team that's playing a lot more closer scoring games, lower scoring games over the past few weeks. And I don't know how explosive they can be going up there right now.
New York Red Bulls, undefeated as we said, but they're still third in the Eastern Conference despite being undefeated. Tops is New England, so they can make a jump there, the Red Bulls, if they win that one. But we'll focus on the other all-Eastern Conference matchup on that Saturday night. It's the Columbus Crew at DC United. 7 Eastern on MLS Live. It's a good one. DC United, they're second. Columbus Crew, they're fourth. Columbus could catch up to DC with a victory there. But we'll get into that game with Kai Kamara. He is the leading scorer in MLS, and he is going to be traveling to RFK Stadium, hoping to add to his league-leading 5 tallies. Kai, thanks for making some time for us today.
Thank you guys very much.
Kai, it sounds like you're eating. Are you in the middle of lunch?
No, actually just finished lunch at the training center, so yeah, perfect time.
Awesome. Hey, Kai, wanted to hit you up with something. Taylor Twellman tweeted out something interesting yesterday, and I know you're on social media, you may have seen it. He says, many players will go out with opponents after the game, and if I'm being honest, that drove me crazy. I hated the other team. Sorry. And this came out in relation to, you know, are people rooting for Montreal? I think it was in that context. But do you mix with the other team when they're in town?
Yes, I do. Actually, looking at the MLS, it's a very small league. We're all connected. We're all kind of brothers for some reason because, you know, players get traded here and there all the time, and there's a lot of players on these teams that you've played with. So you definitely hang out with the other team. So, you know, I can't say I agree with what he says. I mean, like our previous games, you know, playing against Orlando, early on Colin, you know, I call him my brother. Playing, you know, against Philadelphia, there's CJ Sapong, there's Michael LaHood, you know, those guys that I'm really related, you know, connected to. So definitely after the game, yeah, when it comes to the game time, it's a battle. But when it comes after the game, you know, it's okay to, you know, have friends that you go hang out with.
So you're sitting there watching Montreal against Club America on Wednesday night, and I'm assuming you're rooting for Montreal then in that scenario. I'm curious, what'd you think of the game and how did you experience that?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I've been rooting for Montreal, and, you know, it's really nice to see a team from our league to go all the way that far. And Montreal really, you know, the unexpected teams, because I'm sure everybody wants, you know, to hear the LA and those guys to be in there. But, you know, I was really hoping for Montreal to pull it off. I was shocked, you know, at the end of the day when, you know, the result turns out the way it did. But it's going to be hard for them, you know, but it's kind of nice for us too to welcome them back to the MLS because we've kind of missed them. We kind of missed seeing them play in MLS for a while.
And you're sitting there watching the game and everyone's talking about it right now, but in your point of view, you're sitting there watching, and what are you thinking MLS has to do to get over that hill while watching that game?
I can't say MLS. It's more of, yeah, us the players, you know, the teams in the MLS. It's just, you know, being ready to go over that hump of saying we can't win games, you know, playing in Mexico or playing in these other countries that we go to play as CONCACAF games. It, you know, we have to forget about that and just knowing that, you know, if you're a good team, you can go, you know, somewhere and get a result. Montreal was really close to coming back home with, you know, with 3 points, you know, at the last minute, you know, things change. But if we can have the same attitude as how these, you know, other teams are having attitudes of coming into the U.S. and knowing they can, you know, get 3 points from here. I think that's the same attitude we have to go in. I've played in the CONCACAF, and most of the time, I have to be honest, we were going in and knowing it's going to be a hard game. You know, if we can get a point from here, it's okay, but it's not okay. If we can go in there, we know we're a good team. We can definitely, you know, get more than a point.
Kai, we talk a lot about, you know, CONCACAF and playing in CONCACAF and some of the things that happen to clubs and some of the experiences you go through. You mentioned you have been in CONCACAF competition before, but you're also part of the African Confederation when you joined Sierra Leone on national team duty. I'm curious, what's your favorite calf story that maybe is similar to what happens in CONCACAF? Anything crazy happened to you while you've been representing your country?
Crazy, yeah. I should say every game I've played for Sierra Leone. But, you know, I just relate to the last games I've played in. You know, it's definitely an experience and something, the stories that I'll keep, you know, going on forward. You know, having us, having Sierra Leone been affected by Ebola, you know, us have to play all of our last qualifier games away in Ivory Coast and in DR Congo. You know, the reception that they gave us there, you know, us going through, us saying, Sierra Leone national team, we took every player that does not live in Sierra Leone, everybody live overseas, and, you know, we have to, you know, wake up in the morning to get tested for Ebola, and then that's, you know, a different experience that I'll keep, you know, forever, and, you know, I get to share it, you know, with people that saying, you know, that was one of the ways, you know, they try to get into our head.
Now, Kai, obviously, Ebola has since drifted out of the news cycle. I'm assuming, do you keep up to date with what the situation in Sierra Leone is and what the situation with Ebola? Obviously, it's in check, I imagine. I know you were doing a lot of work around that. Is that work still going on? Does it still have to happen?
Yes. I mean, like you said, it's great because it has gone in a way. It has gone away from the media attention a little bit, and, you know, obviously people know more about stuff nowadays when everything is on social media, and, you know, it was for like a month or 2 months, everybody knew what was going on, and after that, people just, you know, kind of shone away from it. But, you know, luckily in Sierra Leone, the cases of Ebola, you know, it's reducing, and there's been, you know, more of the cases too that's happening. There's been more survivals now, which is great, because the message, you know, when I was working, one of the groups to send message around Africa was for the people that have Ebola, people that have Ebola to trust the healthcare workers and, you know, respect them, what they're telling them, you know, to really follow the rules and wash their hands and, you know, don't have their own barriers on their own. So, you know, people are following the rules a lot more now, which, you know, which means we have less cases of Ebola in Sierra Leone, but it's still not zero cases yet, you know, which that's what people are hoping for. So we're hoping in the next, you know, few months, things will change.
Now, talking about Sierra Leone, it was Independence Day on the weekend, and we saw you put up a video of you were out partying around 4:30 in the morning. So it sounds like a pretty late night.
Yeah, no, it was great. I don't do that more often anymore as I used to, you know, because 3:30, I think, you know, staying up late does kind of catch up to you the next day. But it was good fun. It was good fun. I, you know, I was with my people and the people from Sierra Leone. The problem was, you know, because we don't really start partying until 2 o'clock. So that's the problem. People didn't go out till late. And, you know, I took my wife out there and she was there till 1 and she had to go home. And I was like, well, I'll be home later. And the party just got better and better, you know, around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Kai, I promise you we will get to soccer and we will get to your league-leading 5 goals and Crew SC playing unbelievable soccer to start the season. But just one, the tweet that I was most interested came after the Sierra Leone Independence Party tweet. You said 3 hours of sleep heading to practice. Why would you, first off, why would you tweet out that you were at the party that late?
I mean, it's just me. You know, I do everything, you know, I do. I don't hide on anyone. I don't lie to anyone. You know, I be myself. It's not the first time I've done that, you know, but I'm ready to go. You know, I can go to practice the next day or I can have anything the next day, appearance the next day, and I'm ready to go. I mean, it's just one of those. Like, we have training on Sundays. So, you know, I was actually trying to get on Steve Tasha, who's our fitness guy, letting him know that, Steve, I need some sleep. I need to stay home. But, I mean, that's, like I said, you know, me, you know, I don't drink, I don't do anything, so I can stay up as late as I want, I can go back to training and have, you know, the same 120% energy that I have every day when I go in, so nothing changed with me.
And Kai, last question, and then we're going to get into this MLS action, but how much longer and have you thought about your career with Sierra Leone? It's a heavy amount of travel, it pulls you away with the MLS schedule at odd times. Have you thought about maybe where the end of the road is there?
Yes, with Sierra Leone national team, you know, for me, I don't, you know, really count how many more games I have or how many more years I have before, you know, I call it the end of the road. It's all about how much the federation really takes care of the national team and really look after us because I still want to play in the tournament, you know, with Sierra Leone. I still want to, you know, make it to the African Nations Cup or, you know, hopefully the World Cup. I don't think I'll be, you know, too old for that. So really, like now we have some qualification games coming up in June. We don't have a coach yet, so, and I'm expecting a baby in June also. So it's really one of those things where I don't know, you know, how much of preparation that they do have for me to commit to, you know, some of these games that's coming up. But then at the same time, I don't know how much longer, you know, I can be around. So different coach can come in with a different ideas too that wants to go a different route. So I can't really say what it is at the moment.
Now, Kai, it helps that you have, you're doing so well in MLS with Crew SC. And my question for you is, when you joined the club, you must have seen how they played last year and the Greg Berhalter system. And you talked ahead of time with the coach that you would be the center forward. Did you think that the chances would be this plentiful and that you would get these goals? I mean, I'm assuming you watched the video. You thought this could be possible.
Yes, I haven't scored the goals that I expected, you know, myself to score for Columbus yet, because when I came on the team last year and watched them at the end of the year, there was a lot of crosses in the box, and I don't think I've received that many crosses yet. Obviously, that's where I'm dangerous, so I'm still waiting for those. Right now, at the moment, we're just trying to click and trying to connect front four. And hopefully when we get that going, you know, there can be a lot more goals. You know, there's other guys around me that are scoring goals. But I'm really, really happy, actually, to say that I've scored more goals. I've scored the same amount of goals that I did when I was here 2 years ago. So, it's a better road for me than the last time I was here.
And you still have 30 more games to break it this season. Tell us a little bit about Greg Berhalter as a coach, his philosophy, what it's been like to work under him, maybe what your conversations were like with him before you came in.
It's great because I relate, you know, our conversation to when I first spoke to Peter Vermes, you know, at Kansas City, when I told him after I got traded there from Houston, I told Peter that I was not going there. There's no way I'm playing in Kansas City. Kansas City is not a soccer town or anything like that. And he said, just come in here. I'll fly you in. We sit down and talk and then see what happens. So, when I spoke with Greg when I was out in England, and he said, I have your rights, or we have your rights here, but if you don't want to come here, we'll trade your right to wherever you want to go. He didn't pressure me to come here at all. And when I heard that from him, it just, you know, it touched me that, you know, this is not somebody that's trying to force me to do anything. He wants to leave it up to me and see what I want. So, and I, you know, thought about it over and over, and I was like, I called a few guys that's on the team that I know from before, and I talked to them, and they all said he's a player's coach. And I said, well, if that's the case, then, you know, I definitely want to come there. And to be honest, I mean, everything has been good so far. You know, I just hope me and him don't get in a fight anytime soon.
Kai, you're going to, though, upset folks in Kansas City. You just said Kansas City's not a soccer town?
It was. Kansas City wasn't a soccer
town. Oh, wasn't.
You know, we helped build that town to what it is today, yes. Because in 2009, when I was getting traded there, I mean, everybody can tell when we played at the baseball stadium, you know, it was just one of those where you're hoping to get, you know, 10,000 people there, which didn't happen until, you know, we had a good group of guys that helped change that around. And hopefully, you know, things can turn around over here. I'm not saying it hasn't. The fans are amazing, and they've had a few sold-out stadiums last year, but, you know, we just want to have more of that going forward.
Kai, you've been around the game now for a while. You're experienced, you've tasted different styles and different teams. The Berhalter system really stands out to me, and maybe I've just fallen in love with it, but it's so intricate, it's flowing, it works most of the time. You're obviously benefiting from it. Is it anything like you've ever seen in other clubs that you've played for in MLS or outside of MLS?
There's a little bit of it. There's a little bit of it that obviously, like I said again, I don't want to sound like a echo here, you know, relating to Kansas City a lot because that's where I was for a number of years and things were going well. It's all about when a coach has a system and really emphasizes it in that system and builds a team around that system. You know, and that's what he's done here. You know, he picked out his players that knows that can play the system that he wants to play, the possession type system. And that's what he's done and saying, this is what I want to do. And even when we're in preseason, going through preseason, the drills that we do, even to now, the training that we do every day, you know, relates to the same thing that we have to do. So when you have a team that, when you have a coach that implements a system like that and just keeps going and say, we're not going to change, we're going to keep working on this until we perfect it, then, you know, it's going to work. And that's what we've been doing. And I should say that we're probably, you know, halfway there. We're not even halfway there. And, you know, things are looking good. So we definitely have a long way to go.
And for you personally, you talked a little bit about the comparison between KC and Columbus. In KC, you were out wide and you were extremely successful. Now you're playing in the center forward position for Columbus. You talked about that before you came in. Do you wish that you'd gotten this opportunity as a center forward earlier in your career?
No, because in the first 2 years, 2 or 4 years of my career, I played center forward here in Columbus, and over in Houston, I was doing the same thing. And when I went to Kansas City, the coach told me I was going to play wide. I didn't like it. I ended up scoring more goals from the wide position, and then went out to England, and I was, you know, in the middle, outside. And then when I was coming here, coach told me, you know, Berhalter told me that you're going to be up front. I want you as a center guy. And I said, okay, as long as, you know, the crosses come in the box, then I'm okay with that, you know. And now I just have to, you know, keep connecting with people around me. But it's good, the fact that I've played other positions, and so I can switch around. And really, I respect all the other, you know, players around me and knowing what they have to do, because I've been there. And by the time they're doing that, so I'm able to put myself in better position.
This is how flowing the Columbus Crew attack is, Crew SC attack is, that Ethan Finley and you were competing for the player of the match ball, I guess, that I saw the Crew SC coaching staff hand out. Does that happen after victories, after draws, after every game?
It's obviously, you know, it all comes down to how after the game goes. It's mostly after wins, you know, and the match ball is given to, you know, the player that did well that day. Or so the last game, Ethan Finley got the match ball, and I told Ethan he should have given me the ball. Why? Because I just played my 200th game, and I gave him a pretty nice pass for him to score a second goal, but he kept the ball. So I'm still upset about that.
Well, Kai Kamara now looking for the game ball, player of the game, maybe from this Saturday's game, 7 Eastern on MLS Live. You're at DC United, two of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference. And Kai, before we let you go here, is the Eastern Conference stronger than the West? Especially, you see, unbeaten New York. You had Montreal make the Champions League final. UNDC are right up there. New England is at the top of the conference and are playing well again. Is the East, in your opinion, better than the West this year?
It's a tough question, but I'm going to have to say no. You know, my teammates would kick me for that, but I've always thought the Western Conference is usually stronger than the East. But obviously, you know, it's all about, you know, winning the Supporters' Shield and winning your conference. But Western Conference, to me, has always been stronger. Teams like, you know, LA and, you know, Seattle, Salt Lake, those guys are really consistent in what they've done with their team. So I have to say the West is stronger. But for us here, you know, like I say, you know, just win your conference and get into the playoffs, and you know, everything changes from there.
Interesting take from Kai Kamara. Always interesting with Kai Kamara. You can follow him on Twitter. He's one of the most active players in MLS on social media, and he's also active at the top of the goal scoring charts, leading the league with 5 goals. He's hoping to add to that tally at RFK Stadium against DC United, 7 Eastern on MLS Live on Saturday night. Kai, thank you for spending some time with us today. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a great week.
Kai Kamara tops in the goal-scoring charts, but he's tied with Octavio Rivero. Let's not forget about Rivero. I know he's gone.
Both I've started for my fantasy team all season.
Really?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How's your fantasy team doing?
It's doing quite well recently.
Nobody cares. Moving on. DC then against Columbus. DC with a chip on their shoulder, it feels, already starting to develop here. Fabiana Spindola
back,
and I think played really well in his first game.
Huge win.
But I keep going back to Columbus beginning of last year, going into D.C. at RFK Stadium, and just from the get-go, first game of the season, just and they killed D.C. 3-0, I think it was, in the end, and they outplayed them. Big field, suits Columbus Crew SC well. What do you think in this game?
I think it's going to be an interesting test, because I think their styles match up very well for both teams, because D.C. doesn't need to dominate possession. And Columbus can, but DC will be comfortable sitting back a little bit and then trying to hit them on the counter. Columbus is susceptible when they do that, we've seen in games, even in the Orlando game, let's just say, where they went out and dominated and got the red card. Before the red card, Orlando had their little looks. Kaká was finding space. So I think it's a fun matchup because Columbus doesn't play it safe, and it's been successful so far. But this is a higher quality of team than what they've been beating over the past few games.
Interesting you say that. I think actually Columbus Crew FC, with their style, they can transition quickly as well. So if DC does get confident and push up, I think Crew can hit him back with a just as dangerous counter. We'll see. That's going to be one of the intriguing matchups of the weekend. You can catch the entire schedule on MLSsoccer.com. We'll be back after the break with the mailbag. Some interesting topics we'll be getting into there. You're listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com, Sirius XM, Channel 94.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi there, it's Sean Maloney here from Chicago Fire, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back on Extra Time Radio, Simon Borg, David Goss, closing it out now. Another show here. That's Mexican rock band Molotov because, I mean, Liga MX is the best. I mean, didn't you see their tweet after Club America won? La MLS tendrá vacaciones en diciembre otra vez. Nosotros vamos al Mundial de Clubes. MLS will be on vacation once again in December. Again, we will go to the World Club Championship. That was Liga Bancomer MX. The official Twitter handle taking a dig, and they tagged at MLS on it too. So credit for tagging.
I mean, you can't.
How does that leave you feeling?
Does
it heighten the rivalry?
I think so. I think it's starting to create a rivalry, right? I don't know if there's really
between
been
the
a
leagues?
Rivalry from their side to
you
MLS.
You know what we should do? We should count how many goals happen in Liga MX every week.
Okay.
And we should be tweeting at Liga Bancomer MX and saying, hey, how many fans showed up at your games this weekend? Here's our average attendance. Hey, how many goals were scored?
You think that will get you think that will get under people's skin? Would that bother you?
I just think our Extra Time handle, which you manage, David.
Oh, our. I thought you meant MLS. No. Ours.
Yeah, I can't tell.
You want me to start trolling Liga Bancomer MX?
I think our fans would appreciate you doing that.
Okay, I'm happy to troll away.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know. If
Club America loses maybe this weekend, you can just take a dig at them somehow.
But does that mean Montreal also has to win in their next game for that to be allowed?
No, get creative. Maybe you're the wrong guy to do this, but maybe. I'll help you. Just give me a call or, you know, our listeners will help you.
Okay.
We got to get back at Liga Bancomer MX. And they need to take notice of Extra Time Radio.
Can I tweet at them and tell them that their tweets sound like scissors in my ear?
So, scissors in the ear. We talked about that in the last episode. We got some feedback on it.
Yeah, we got people. Scissors in the air. Someone emailed us and told us it's like it's equal to nails on a chalkboard in the I guess that's an American
saying. It's a phrase that Diego Pinzon used
to describe
native
some
Colombian.
Music.
He describes some music as yeah.
So yeah, I never heard scissors it when I heard ear. It on the show because I listened to the show on Monday because I actually like the show unlike you and Andrew. And I had no idea what he was talking about when he first said it as well.
Really?
Yeah, I'd never heard it before.
Common sense. Couldn't tell you that.
No, you understand it's negative.
The song is grating.
But when you don't know something's a set saying, it sounds like he made it up. And you're like, why was that what he chose to go with? Now, then when you said, I also do that, I translate directly. That's the first time that it hit me that it could have been a saying in another language.
Yeah, it is a saying. So, but it's definitely a stronger saying that nails on a chalkboard.
I don't.
For sure.
I'm
going to use it moving forward.
I don't know if it's as accurate. Because nails on a chalkboard is like, that's a grinding noise. And scissors in the ear makes it sound like someone's cutting your ears off.
Cutting the ears off?
Yeah, whatever they're doing.
Or plucking your eardrum out.
Maybe. Either way.
So, David, it wouldn't be the mailbag if we didn't talk goal celebrations. And this time we're going to pick on, I think we were talking Chicharito and Thierry Henry and the uncool thing he did last a couple weeks ago. Eric Ayuk. Philadelphia Union winger comes into the game. The team is losing 3-0 and does 5 flips after his goal takes them to 3-1.
Yeah, so we got an email saying that it was maybe a little bit too much. Just grab the ball and run to the center circle. And
we didn't talk about it. We didn't talk about it in the last show. But
you can't disagree with that.
Here's my question, though. If he does one flip,
yeah, It's still overdone. You're down 3-0.
Is that overdone? One flip?
If it's not a significant goal, it wasn't his first goal. It wasn't his 100th. It wasn't a hat trick. It's a goal in a game. You're down 3-1. Now you have to run back to the center circle and start playing again. You don't get to do a full celebration when you're down 3-0.
He flipped five times, and you corrected me on that number. But I
think it's five. It's a cartwheel and four flips.
And then he just pumped his arms at the end. The pump at the end. You can watch Eric Aiyuk in that Philly game against Toronto on Saturday afternoon, and we'll go over that game. We'll go over the whole slate when we get back together on Monday. You'll be here, David?
Yes.
Weeby's going to be here. The crew will be back together, and we'll see you next week. You're listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com, Sirius XM, Channel 94. We'll see you then.